You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K25. It's myself, Mo Mootsy, alongside me as always, three-time NBA champion and general manager extraordinaire, Mr. Scott Perry. Gentlemen, we didn't have an episode yesterday, but we're back in business today. How are you? How are your weekends?
We're good. Scott and I were concerned, Mo. Everything okay?
It's all good. Sometimes you gotta take care of life, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I had to go out of town for a little bit.
We started looking on the side of milk cartons, you know, look to make sure you wasn't missing that. You know, when somebody's missing here in the States, they put their pictures sometimes on the side of milk cartons.
I don't know why you're looking at me, because you're the one who told me if you don't see me, don't look for me. I don't know why
that's right, Bo. You got a good memory.
I gotta go out of town for a little bit. But you know, we're back to talk more basketball. The playoffs are less than a month away now. We're heading down to the business end of the season. I wanted to start this episode by putting some respect on Mr. Scott Perry's name.
Yes.
Because as we watch the NBA, there are two players right now who are balling out that I don't think Scott is getting enough credit for. You know, sometimes we post clips of the show and, you know, the Knicks fans are great, and a lot of them realize the great work that Scott did in New York. Some of them are a little sorry. Some of them are a little bit mad about the Kevin Knox pick. But, you know, these things happen. Mm-hmm. There ain't a general manager out there who ain't, you know, had one of these picks. However, there are two gentlemen in the league right now. One currently in Minnesota and one currently in Philadelphia. That's Julius Randle and that's Quentin Grimes, who have been, you know, the players to watch over the last week or so. Let's start with the Timberwolves. BJ and I spoke about this a little bit last week. But, you know, Scott, you brought Julius over to New York. Obviously, after you left, he moved on to the Timberwolves. But the Timberwolves have really started to figure things out. And I don't know if people have realized, the Timberwolves now, over the past month plus, they're looking like a legit team. You know, they took a while to get things clicking at the start of the season. But now, with Julius Randle in the lineup, they're looking like they could actually be a serious threat in the postseason. What have you seen from Julius and the Timberwolves over the last recent stretch of play?
Well, you guys hit it on the head. The Timberwolves are playing great. Had a tough loss last night. Undermanned Indiana came in there and got him. Another one of my guys, Obi Toppin.
you created a
huge night. Had a huge night last night. I mean,
he
couldn't
miss.
The three
he hit to win that game?
But before he hit that three, he hit three other threes to give him a lead. Yeah. So he showed up big time in crunch time yesterday, played 41 minutes. He was huge. But back to Minnesota. Look, I got a chance to spend a little time with this team early in the year, and I know what they're made of. And I know what Julius Randle's made of. Didn't get a chance to work with Dante DiVincenzo in New York, but always liked his game, studied him from afar, and I knew that he brought toughness as well. And what you're seeing now is just two guys who have spent the entire season trying to figure out how they could best help this team become championship contenders. Because that's all they're really focused on is winning. See, that's the misconception, I think, about a guy like Julius Randle. People, because, you know, his game is a little ball dominant and he's, you know, he scored a lot for the Knicks during his time there with the Knicks. But underneath it all, Julius Randle wants to win and he will do whatever is asked of him if he knows that's going to help the team win. And that's what he's figured out. And you never want to see a guy get injured. But I think right before his injury, I believe the Timberwolves had won five straight. He gets hurt. And then when he comes back, they went eight straight. So during that time off, here's what I know about a guy like Julius Randle. He really studies what's going on with his team. He's very reflective. He watches a lot of film on himself and his teammates, and he sat there, and I think it probably gave him an opportunity to say, okay, this is exactly what I need to do with this ball club. He knows Anthony Edwards is the man, is the star. He has no issue with that. So he's trying to figure out how he can best help him and this organization win. And look, he's still going to get his 20 points, but Julius is an underrated passer. He's defending much more consistently now because that's being asked of him. And he, Julius, one thing I know about him, he never wants to be the weak link on a roster. So he's defending well. And I just think the way this team is energized right now, and BJ knows this as well, what happened in November and December, that's so far ago in history and memory, doesn't matter now. It's how you're playing here in March and April, lead, you know, heading into the playoffs that really matters. And that's what makes this team dangerous because they're playing their best basketball right now. DiVincenzo has finally settled in and he's starting to shoot the ball more consistently like we know he's capable of from three, but he's also moving well off the ball. He's getting used to playing with Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards is getting used to playing with those guys. And then I'm going to tell you, the other guy who's really starting to step up now is Jaden Daniels. Because he is really playing very well as well. Now, we knew he was a great defender, but offensively, he's starting to pick it up. Naz Reid, as we know, is always in the mix for sixth man of the year. And, you know, he can... He's like a sixth starter for that team. So I like the group. They are going to be a dangerous team come playoff time. I think Chris Finch does an excellent job, he and his staff, with that group. I like the environment and the camaraderie that exists there. And that can carry you a long way, especially through some difficult times, which they had a little bit early. They were really up and down. They win two, lose two. And they were around that 500 team. Now they're 10 games above it. I expect them to, the schedule's softening up a little bit for them. I expect them to really head into these playoffs with a lot of momentum and a team that I think is very capable of at least getting back to the conference finals. But you know, a lot of basketball still to be played.
BJ, how far do you see this Timberwolves team going if the playoffs were to begin today?
Well, this is not a talent issue that you see with this group. I mean, they had a couple guys that scored over 20 points last night off their bench, talking about DiVincenzo and Naz Reid. I think one had 19, the other had like 21. They have an elite player in Anthony Edwards, Julius Randle, all-star, Rudy Gobert, all-star. They have all of the pieces. Now, they've had some injuries that Scott has alluded to, and they're just trying to figure this out. It's very hard when you have this many talented players. It's actually, I think it's fairly rare that a team comes together that's as talented as this group. But you can see, you know, there's been moments during the course of the season, you know, there's this 8-game winning streak here, and then they'll underachieve a little bit for whatever the reason may be. I like this team, and you never know when it's going to all come together, but Scott has had an opportunity to see something that the rest of us couldn't see. He's seen this team. He's watched them practice. And he kind of knows the personalities where we're just watching from afar. So, and based on what I've heard from Scott, they're very capable of putting together a stretch, especially when the playoffs. And the reason I'll say that is because I do know this about their group. They have some toughness there. DiVincenzo is a tough kid. Naz Reid, tough kid. Julius Randle, tough kid. Anthony Randle's tough kid. They have some toughness there. So they have a chance. I would not want to play this team. I definitely wouldn't want to play this team when they have nothing to lose and feel like they have nothing to lose. I think it's much more difficult to play when you have expectations on you. But, you know, they've been to the conference. It was the conference finals a year ago, correct?
Yep. Yes.
They went to the conference finals.
They lost to Dallas last year.
I like their team. I really do. I like their team. I like their team at the beginning of the year. And
can they get back to that conference finals?
Yeah, for sure. For sure they have the talent. You know, when you have talent, you can do anything. Okay. But it has to come together for them. What they haven't had, they haven't played together all year as a group. That's been the big thing. And you never know, but they seem like they like each other. They seem to play with one another, but for whatever reason, it hasn't come together for them. And, but I do, I really think they could get back to the conference finals and beyond.
Okay. Well, I look forward to seeing it. Let's talk about the other player I mentioned, Mr. Quentin Grimes. He's been over there for the Philadelphia 76ers, and you know, they've had their struggles this season. The Mavs Sixers game the other day, a historic 20 players combined between the two teams were listed as out. If you watch like the warm-ups for that game, there was like six or seven guys on the court in total actually warming up for it. But Quentin Grimes has taken this opportunity to show what he's capable of doing. I think he had 46 in the last game against the Rockets. Scott, what have you seen from him?
Here's what I know about Quentin Grimes. Quentin Grimes loves basketball. And any chance he gets to get out on that floor, and when he gets minutes, he's going to compete and he's going to play extremely hard. That's what I know about him. And now that he's been around the league long enough, he's starting to relax even more and understand, okay, I can get some things accomplished. He's a very good shooter from beyond the arc at three. But what he's adding to his game now, especially with the minutes that he's getting now in Philadelphia, and he's not looking over his shoulder, worrying about when he's going to be subbed in or out of the game now because they're down on bodies. You know, you're starting to see him being able to create a little more off the bounce than what we've seen, you know, in prior stops in New York and Dallas, and he was just there in Detroit for a short time. So he's getting back to some of the things that he used to do in high school. You know, one little known fact from the general public may not know about Quentin Grimes, he played point guard some in high school. So there was a time in his basketball career that he was used to having the ball in his hands more. And then, you know, coming into the league, he was pushed more as a two guard, and he obviously played more two in college as well. But he has that in his background, and you're starting to see a little bit of that in terms of his, like, again, like I mentioned, his comfort level of putting it down a little bit on the floor, getting to the rim, finishing, more athletic than what people realize. And, you know, when he first started with us in New York, what everybody saw was his ability to defend. And there were a number of people on that New York roster who could score the basketball. But again, whatever he got in terms of minutes, he was going to try to maximize those. And so early on in his career, it was on the defensive side of the ball. So I'm happy for him. I think he's going to be in position this offseason to get a nice contract somewhere, whether it's in Philadelphia or with another team around the league that's a contending team, because Quentin Grimes is a really high character guy who's a good player on a good basketball team and the kind of professional you want in your environment. So I'm happy for him and just really intrigued to see what's going to be his next step in terms of where he ends up, whether he remains in Philly or he moves on and goes elsewhere.
He's on a really good contract. He's making just about $4 million this year. He is in restricted free agency next summer. But the way he's playing, you know, they were guarding him the other night like he was prime Steph Curry, trying to get the ball, trying to not even let him catch the ball. I don't know if the Sixers, with all the money they've got tied up, are going to be able to match an offer if a big offer comes through for him, you know, in free agency this summer. So that's definitely going to be one to keep an eye on. I did want to ask you guys a question about the Knicks. You know, I don't know if you saw the thing that happened between Draymond Green and Karl-Anthony Towns last week, where Draymond said that Kat didn't play against the Warriors because he was scared of facing Jimmy Butler. But Kat was actually at a funeral, a family funeral, and so on and so forth. And there was a lot of discourse in the media about that. The Warriors and the Knicks played again, and Kat did suit up. There was a little bit of trash talk going on. But as soon as the game finished, kind of Kat just went down a tunnel. And the narrative online was, you know, the Knicks teammates were, you know, shaking hands with Draymond, dapping him up after the game. Is that just the fans reading into it, or is that a sign of, you know, not much chemistry going on with the team? If you've got someone who's, you know, speaking about your teammate in that way, so on and so forth, you got any business shaking hands with them after the game while your teammate goes back to the locker room?
You know, Mo, I didn't catch all of that, but just listening to what you said, I just think in today's game, these guys have been playing AAU ball together for years. They know one another. They're friendly. I don't know how many just like real antagonistic relationships there are in the NBA versus when the time that BJ played, where guys you know, if there's something like that occurred, that hard feelings would be harbored for a long time, for sure, for the remainder of the entire season, if not seasons beyond. But you're just in a different era now, a different generation. The guys see each other, they know one another. That's what they do afterwards. They dap, they shake hands. And I don't believe they're even thinking about, you know, all of that that has transpired, other than, you know, obviously Carl Anthony Towns and Draymond, the two main ones, but the rest of the teammates on both sides, if they know one another, they're going to speak, they're going to shake hands, they're going to hug, they're going to do whatever they do. That's just, to me, more a sign of the times. And I wouldn't read into it that there's any discourse going on in New York, because I believe the Carl, from all that I can see from afar, has good relationships with the teammates, and those and the teammates will, on that court, they will fight for him, and they believe he'll fight for them as well. So I didn't read anything big into it.
BJ, do you have any thoughts about that?
I don't know. You know more. I know
we're here, so I had to ask.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I know, but I had to ask.
That's your space. You are the expert. You're the in-house expert on all these things.
I'll say this. I live by code. You know what I'm saying? You can't disrespect one of my dogs and think we're going to shake hands after the game. But, you know, this weekend I realized I'm an old head. You know, I did something.
Mo, you're old head. Think about that.
I'm an old head. It's crazy. I did something that I haven't done really ever this weekend. I logged out of Twitter this weekend. You know, you know, I'll be tweeting all day long. I had to log out. I'm gonna read you a tweet that I saw. There's a kid. He said, "I think it's fine to say that Shea is a better player than Kobe ever was." And then someone responded to him saying, "Without the championships, you might be cooking." And his response was, "The championships don't even matter anyway. That's a team award." Which, number one, Shea, as great as he is this season, being better than Kobe ever was, blasphemy. Number two, championships being a team award. Championships aren't an award. Championships are why you play the game. I don't care about anything else. Championships are all that matters. I don't care what people say about stats, this and that. And there's been a lot of discourse online about Shea is having a great season. And no one can dispute that. He's having an all-time great season. But there's been a lot of comparison talk between Shea and prime Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant's MVP season and Kobe Bryant. And now this is how I know I'm old head, because they just keep bringing up the stats and so on and so forth. I think people fail to realize stats in this current era of the NBA are so inflated because of the pace of the play, the scoring, that at the rate at which these teams score, the stats can't be compared like for like in terms of points per game or whatever it might be. But I wanted to get your guys' take based on the eye test, not using any stats. Where do you rank this season of Shea Gilgeous-Alexander in comparison with, you know, some of the former great MVP seasons or great players that we've seen in league history?
Wow. From a numerical standpoint, I heard this the other day, what he has done in terms of averaging 32 points, I don't know, close to, was it six or six, six rebounds? And those are his numbers right now.
Mm-hmm.
The only one to have those averages and average, obviously, more points was Michael Jordan. Now, that's, again, that's the numbers, what the numbers have said. I think he's been phenomenal this year. And, you know, I'm not going to get in comparing him to Kobe Bryant. And they're two different type of players as well, in my estimation, or comparing him to Michael Jordan. What I will say, what he is doing, every big moment this season, he's shown up. Whether it's a marquee matchup, just here recently, Mo, I hate to bring this up, when they just went and played your Celtics.
No, they did. They had a great game.
Yeah, he played great, showed up in a big way. You know, when they go to the Garden, that's always a big measuring stick. How do you play when you go to New York City? 40 points there, plays great, leads them to a win. Any of the other marquee matchups that they've been on in terms of nationally televised games, this guy's shown up and shown out just about at every turn. And his what I love about how he's played, his demeanor stays the same. He never really gets too high, too low. He just comes and competes, he plays, and you can see the biggest change, aside from some nuances he's added to his game from a skill perspective, his confidence level is off the charts now. You can just tell when he walks on that court now, he's not guessing, he's not thinking, he's not hoping. He knows he's the best player on that floor each and every night. And BJ will tell you, as a player, when you can get to that zone where you know that going in every night, boy, you're tough to deal with when you add a guy who's 6'6" at the point guard position and has the skills that he has. But that mental toughness and that mental edge that he's displaying this year, to me, is terrific. And, again, I don't want to keep harping this point, but, Mo, he was my preseason pick for MVP this year, if you do recall.
Mm-hmm. I do indeed. I do. Don't worry, we got that footage. We'll post that when the ceremony comes around.
Exactly, exactly.
Don't worry, Scott. We got you.
We got you.
What about you, BJ? You know, when you watch Shea play, who does he kind of remind you of? Are there any players from NBA history where you can kind of see a comparison to his style of play and the level at which he's doing it on the court?
Well, you know, Mo, it's funny. It's as you get older, you have to have a sense of humor. So, you know, to hear you say, hey, you're an old head. And I was just laughing. I was like, oh, wow, this guy's an old head. And then you got the new school, right? These are terms. The thing that's really funny is as you get older, you realize, you know, the one constant in life is change. So you have to be, you know, able to change. For instance, when Scott came in as an executive in this league, the league was a lot different, and Scott had to change in order as the players, the evolution, trends, and all these things. But Mo, as you get older, I'm going to encourage you to keep changing so that you don't become the old head. But you have to be old enough to realize the following. When you watch someone like Shea, you recognize, Mo, there's a thing called authenticity. You have to be authentic. You have to be real in your observation when someone asks you a question. Scott and I saw a man average 37 points a night with hand checking. I can't compare what's going on today to what we saw. Because if I tell you what I saw, you're going to immediately label me and say, oh, that's just the old head. We saw George Gervin play. We saw Julius Irvin play. We saw these people. We saw Larry Bird and Dominique Wilkins and all of these guys play. I'm not going to sit here in 2025 and start comparing the way they play today to when you saw a man do this with hand checking. Now, hand checking to me is what we should be discussing, because the game and the physicality of the game and the way they defend it was different. Mm-hmm. I would be thoroughly impressed if I saw a man play with hand checking and do what Shea is doing. And I'm not taking away, this is not Shea's fault. The rules have changed. The way the game has changed. That's a fact. So I'm going to be authentic and say, I'm admiring what Shea has done. I think Shea is the MVP. And I'm not going to compare what someone else has done just by bringing up stats, because the game is different. We have to be authentic here. We have to be real here. We can't compare this to the 90s or the 80s or these other. We can't. There's nothing to compare. The game is different. Unless we start allowing players to play by the same rules of the game and change the game back to how it used to be played and what they used to do, I'm going to stay away from that argument. Shea's numbers speak for themselves. The way they play, the style, the pace, the physicality of an offensive player is a little different, right? You weren't allowed to play this way. So we know that. Unfortunately, if we say that, then people are going to say, oh, man, he doesn't. No, that's what it was. Like, as a guard, just as a guard, as a lead guard, we never had a chance to play watching the entire floor because you could hand check. All guards, any lead guard, you can ask any lead guard that played in the 70s, 80s, or 90s. You had to play with your back, bringing the ball up the court because a guy had his hand on your waist. You had to do that to protect the ball. You don't have the ability now to just play in front because no one can touch you. That's a major, major change in the rules that allowed the players to play differently. Suddenly now you could play and attack people. So today's guards can play downhill. Well, in that era, you couldn't play downhill. So why am I going to compare one to another? I'm going to admire these players, admire the rules, admire the game as it has evolved. And that's what it is. So Shea has been phenomenal. Scott picked it at the beginning of the year. I think, I don't know, I can't remember who I picked. Jokic or someone.
I think Luka.
Tatum. No, Luka, I think
Jason Tatum. Tatum.
Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum.
Luka, yep. Tatum, mm-hmm. and all
they've
these guys.
They've all been great.
They've all been great.
And that's the thing. They've all been great.
Players for what they do. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. it's so unfair when we start comparing these players because the rules matter. You know, when you watch a player today, I always think about this. Life would have been different if you're allowed to carry the ball. It's just,
I saw that Luka the other day. He does the run. But instead of taking a 2 steps for the layup, he takes another dribble and then goes for the layup. And I'm looking at it like, come on, guys.
And these are things that I'll look at and everyone's like, oh, man, shooting threes. No, I just want to know what it's like to carry the ball and be okay with that. That's an advantage.
Yeah,
exactly. Get down to the park.
Yeah, so I'm going to admire him. I'm going to be authentic. I'm going to be real. But if you want to know the real story, there's nothing to compare. There's really nothing to compare because of the way the game was played. And we're talking about how the game was played half of the game because you're on defense half of the time. So this mm-hmm. isn't an opinion. This is just what it is. So mm-hmm. let's move on in our coverage. Shea could have easily, let me say, Shea could have played in that era. You know, it would have been a different game. Mm-hmm. And the way he's defended would have been different. The way they play and all of the step throughs, I can assure you, if he's trying to step through guys in that era, he probably wouldn't have done that a lot. Okay? Just because of the way the game was played. But it is what it is. It's fun to look at the stats because it gives you an argument. But for us who was there, we were there. Let me assure you, we were there. That wasn't happening. But he would have found another way to be impactful because he's that good. He's a talented, talented young man. But so I'm not going to. Last thing. Because we were playing in that era, Scott and I were literally playing in that era. Okay. Scott, as a lead guard, knows there was no guard that was going to come down and be shooting as much as he's shooting as a lead guard in that era. So it's not even fair for us to think that was going to happen.
Right.
This whole phenomenon of scoring as a lead guard, this is like new to this era. Mm-hmm. That wasn't happening in our era.
Right.
So you can make these cases and then all of a sudden compare. Michael Jordan was a two guard. Well, is Shea a lead guard or a two guard? Which one is he? But in today's game, there's a lot of lead guards that can score. You know, there's Ja Morant, there's Steph Curry, there's
everyone.
De'Aaron Fox.
Everyone can score their point guard in this game.
That's a new phenomenon that, for better or for worse, That didn't happen for us. I mean, I couldn't explore that. Isaiah Thomas, who was the best out of all of us, he made a decision to do that. I say this all the time. He was Allen Iverson before Allen Iverson, but he chose to do the other things that a lead guard could do. Isaiah could score.
Oh, no question.
He could score with the best of them, but he chose the team responsibility instead of just becoming an elite scorer. He could have easily averaged 30 points a game. He was literally that good. And you saw it every now and then when he needed to do it. You know, he would have quarters or moments and games or stretches. Mm-hmm. He was that good. That's the best out of all those little guys. All of them. Those 6 foot guys, he was the best one because he could choose whatever he wanted to do. He was that talented. So in saying all of that, I'm going to give Shea all of his credit. He is, in today's game, as a lead guard, he is a handful, Scott. He's a handful.
No question.
I admire what he's doing. I can't wait to see what he does in the playoffs and continue to watch him in today's era. We're old enough. Scott and I are old enough to say that. But we've seen the game evolve, and because we're authentic and we respect the game, we're not going to disrespect the game. That's what people are doing. You poo-poo what the previous generation has done or did. You know, there were Earl Monroe and Walt Frazier. These were some pretty good guys, you know. One of my favorite, you know, Michael Ray Richardson.
Oh, super talented.
The Sugar Man. These guys, you know, there's some great players. Andrew Toney. They're great, great players in any era. However, I'm going to look at this era for what it is and stop all of the comparison because we owe that to the next generation so that they can see the rules of the game. The game is different. I like the way the game used to be because it was a physical game. It wasn't played anywhere else in the world other than in the NBA. Now, Scott and I, in particular, Mo, and you can do this too because you live in Europe. The FIBA game is probably the most physical game in the world.
Yep.
The physicality of the game in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you hear it from the NBA. You know, Luka, Jokic, all of these guys have said it's easier to score in the NBA than it is score elsewhere.
Think about that. Never would have been said years ago.
That to me says it all. That to me says everything that I need to hear. So, no, I'm not old. I've just moved on. I'm moved on past the way the game used to be, and I'm looking at it for what it is. And Luka is right. He's right. It's a different game now. So, because we've moved on, no, Mo, don't be old school. Be the real school. Just call it like it is. Call it what you see, how the game is played. And then let's begin to say what it's going to look like. Because remember, we're in the era of shooting right now. And Shea could be an MVP. And Scott scouted him and evaluated him. And if I remember correctly, Scott, you brought him into the New York Knicks to work out. Think about this. Shea, Jokic, Giannis, Luka Doncic, and all of these guys, they play more like the old school players than the new school. And these guys are going to be the MVP. Giannis, he's not a shooter. Back-to-back MVP. Jokic isn't like this elite athlete where we talk, we're running, jumping, and three-time MVP. Shea Alexander, the big knock on him, Scott, was he couldn't shoot. This guy has been all NBA, last 2 years, first team? And he could be very well the MVP this year. I'm impressed how the game keeps coming back to the essence of what it is. I'm always impressed with the fundamentals of the game. And guess what, Scott, Mo? That's not old school. That's not new school. That's just what it is. So if anything, get back to the fundamentals of the game. You could play in any era. regardless of the rules and the changes of everything that we're talking about.
When you think about that, that's an excellent point. Whether it's basketball, football, baseball, football over in Europe, Mo, which is soccer, the teams that have the players and have instilled the fundamental level of execution and can still execute fundamentals at a high level, oftentimes are the ones that end up winning and are successful. You can't escape the fundamentals. And that's what this new generation of MVPs in the NBA are showing you. That, to BJ's point, they're taking you back in time some because they're not the most athletic players, maybe with the exception of Giannis, but he's long. Mm-hmm. But they are highly skilled basketball players. You know, Jokic, he probably can't jump 10 inches off the ground. But he's the best player in the world because he knows how to play. He knows how to pass. He knows how to pivot. He sees the floor. He sees one and two plays ahead. You know, Shea very understands angles. Again, he understands, you know, angles to get around people, angles how to finish at the rim, just all of those things. And the year that Joel Embiid won it, you know, look at the footwork the big fella has. You know, you're going back in time with footwork of, you know, some of the game's great centers that all had great footwork from the Hakeem Olajuwons and Jabbars and all those guys, man. So it's amazing how you always get back to fundamentals. And my hope for the game at large now is that we start getting more fundamental teaching that these guys are bringing over here from overseas at our youth levels from both high school and college, that we really get back to that. Because we got tremendous athletes playing the game now. Now but the ones that are winning and winning all awards right now at our level. And Luka hasn't won one yet, but he's another one who...
Oh, he's got a Lakers jersey on now. He's going to win it next
year. Yeah, exactly. He'll get one now with Lakers. Exactly.
I'll tell you that for free.
Yeah, yeah. So, but, I mean, you know, so it's something to definitely study and look at.
Yeah, well, you mentioned college just there. And before we get out of here, it's that time of the year. It's March Madness. And we're going to go through real quick and do the bracket for March Madness. Are you guys ready?
Oh, we're going to do the bracket.
We're going to do the bracket here, right now. I've not been watching college basketball this year, so it's up to you guys. I have no idea what's going on.
You don't have any idea what's going on.
Mo, look at Mo. you see that, Scott? Scott, you see that? I have no idea, but we're going to do it. I have no idea.
No, exactly. You guys are going to do it. I'm going to fill it in. BJ, they got my boy DJ Burns playing in China. I need to watch college basketball this year. I ain't got no reason to watch.
Okay.
All right. The first game, Auburn versus Alabama State or St. Francis U.
Auburn.
Easily. Louisville and Creighton.
I'm going to take Louisville. That's a close game, but I'll take Louisville.
Yeah, BJ, you let us know if you disagree with any of these. Michigan versus UC San Diego.
Come on, Mo. You know where I'm going with that one.
We've got to go Michigan with that
one. Go blue, exactly. Go blue, exactly.
Texas A&M and Yale.
A&M's tough. They're tough. They defend and they play a tough brand of basketball. So give me A&M.
And then we've got Ole Miss, who will face the winner of UNC or San Diego State.
Oh, man. You know, there's always upsets in there. And both of those teams, San Diego State or North Carolina, to me, are capable of upsetting
Ole Miss. How come the UNC, they're supposed to be good. How come they're not automatically in the bracket?
Well, they weren't that good this year. I mean, they lost a lot of games this year. And so there was a lot of actually pushback when they got even to this point here in the tournament. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of critique and criticism, wondering how they got there. Now, look, they played a very tough schedule, but I think they're capable of winning the game. So I think the winner of that, San Diego State, North Carolina, upsets Ole Miss.
You got our first upset. Iowa State versus Lipscomb.
Yeah, I have not seen Lipscomb, so I got to go Iowa State.
Yeah, that's the wrong Iowa for BJ, huh?
Yeah.
Marquette and New Mexico.
Oh,
that's a tough one.
That could be an upset there too.
BJ, what
I've not
thinking?
Seen either team, but
I'm gonna go with my guy.
Shaka Smart.
I'm gonna go
New Mexico and upset.
Okay, Michigan State and Bryant.
State, Michigan yeah. State.
All right, we'll complete this South Division first, and then we'll get to the Final Four at the end. So Auburn and Louisville.
Auburn.
Michigan and Texas A&M. With no bias, Scott, with no bias.
Mm-hmm. Texas A&M is tough. The number one offensive rebounding team in the country. I think A&M wins that.
Okay.
Wow.
San Diego State and UNC, the winner of that versus Iowa State.
I'm gonna stay with the 11th seed. Somebody there's always, you know, seed that gets there. So
Cinderella, Scott's picking the Cinderella.
Yeah, Cinderella. I got, hey, look, this is the bracket. I'm gonna pick the Cinderella. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, Marquette or Michigan State?
Michigan State.
Michigan State, the 2 seed. Okay, mm-hmm. Cool. Auburn or Texas A&M?
Auburn.
And then San Diego State, UNC, will the Cinderella story continue or will Michigan State get the win over there?
You said San Diego, or who's playing next?
San Diego State or UNC versus Michigan State.
I'm going to go Michigan State.
Yeah. And that leaves Auburn and Michigan State. Who's going to the Final Four?
That's a tough one. You know, Auburn is the number one seed and all that.
One seed,
but somehow, right. But I'm going to give Michigan State the advantage. I think Michigan State's going to win that.
Okay, they're headed to the
now. Finals. This is coming from a Michigan guy now.
Yeah, that takes a lot.
So I'm taking my bet. It takes a lot, right?
Okay, so in the East, we've got Duke versus American or Mount St. Mary's.
Long as Cooper Flagg is healthy, Duke is going through for me, but go ahead.
Mississippi State versus Baylor.
I'm going Baylor.
BJ, you on board with all these picks?
I'm going Mississippi State. I believe the SEC is hands down. The SEC is hands down the best conference.
Well, they got 14. Yeah, they got 14 teams.
They're battle tested. Mm-hmm. That's what I see. They're hands down.
Yeah, Baylor just has a top five pick in the draft. So if he's going to be a top five pick, he got to show through. That's why I'm picking Baylor. The kid, VJ Edgecombe.
He's pretty good. And that's one of the few college players I have watched. So I'm going to have to give the edge to Baylor in this one. Oregon versus Liberty.
I'm going to go Oregon.
Arizona versus Akron.
Could be an upset.
I'm picking Arizona for the ladies. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Oh, no, it's not Arizona State.
No, Arizona, I know. Arizona, no, I know. But Akron's pretty good, man.
Yeah?
They're smaller. That's a little concern there, but they're capable.
Mm-hmm.
They've won like 12 out of the last 13 or something like that. All right, I'm going to go on board. I'm going to pick an upset.
Okay. BYU versus VCU.
Not seen either team. I saw a little VCU.
VCU. We're one of the homies plays for VCU. Shout out to Michael Bell. We're picking.
You're picking VCU.
We're rolling with a UK presence in March Madness.
Okay.
Wisconsin versus Montana.
Wisconsin.
St. Mary's versus Vanderbilt.
BJ, I know BJ, you got to pick Vanderbilt on that one, don't you?
No, I'm picking St. Mary's. You said St. Mary's, right? You said St.
Yeah.
Mary's? I watch St. Mary's a lot out here on the West Coast.
Yeah.
I'm picking St. Mary's. St. Mary's, I think they won their conference tournament against San Francisco.
Gonzaga. Oh, San Francisco. Okay. Yeah, I see they the seventh seed, Vanderbilt's the 10th. Going against the SEC.
Yeah, I'm going to pick. I like their style of play.
I don't have a strong opinion either way. To be honest,
I'm gonna go with St. Mary's
for the show. Okay,
Alabama or Robert Morris?
Alabama.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. That's the first round. So Duke versus Baylor.
Duke.
Oregon versus Akron. Geographically, these don't make sense because how the hell is Oregon in the East?
Yeah, I haven't watched them, but I'll go Oregon. I'll go Oregon.
VCU versus Wisconsin.
The Big Ten.
Okay, going to Big Ten, Wisconsin then, okay.
Wisconsin's pretty good.
There's St. Mary's versus Alabama. BJ, you seem pretty high on St. Mary's.
Alabama. That's the SEC. That's the SEC, baby.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Duke versus Oregon.
Duke.
For me. And then Wisconsin versus Alabama.
Ooh.
The 3 seed versus the 2 seed. That's tough.
I think Alabama probably has a little more talent.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna go with Alabama.
Okay. Duke versus Alabama. Who's getting to the Final Four? Cooper Flagg.
I'm riding with Cooper Flagg. As long as he's healthy, I'm riding with Cooper
BJ, Flagg. Any disputes?
I'm going to go Alabama on that one.
Oh.
Okay.
now I got a pick. Okay. Who's on Alabama? Who's the best player on Alabama?
They got good guards. I can't call the names.
I'm gonna go with star power. If Cooper Flagg's healthy, I'm gonna go with the star. Mm-hmm. He's giving all this talk about wanting to stay in college another year. So, you know, all right. So so far we got Michigan State and Duke headed to the Final Four. Okay, we head over to the West. Florida versus Norfolk State.
Florida.
UConn versus Oklahoma.
That's going to be a close one.
It's got to be.
Because Oklahoma has a guy that's potential lottery pick, guard Fears. I'd say, I'm going to pick, it may be a mild upset, but I'm going to pick Oklahoma.
The Lakers fans will have a field day if Dan Hurley gets sent home in the first round. Memphis and Colorado State.
I'm going to go with Penny Hardaway.
Yeah.
It's good. Memphis Tigers.
Maryland versus Grand Canyon.
Maryland.
Missouri versus Drake. I know BJ ain't picking Drake.
I don't really have a song for, you know, Missouri's got a tough team, though, and they've improved a lot this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that game's in Wichita.
I have no idea.
It looks like it is. So I'll go Missouri.
Yep. Texas Tech versus UNC Wilmington.
I'll go with the higher seed, the Texas Tech.
Yep. Kansas and Arkansas.
Woo! That's an interesting one, man. That one really could go either way. I'm going to go Arkansas.
Arkansas. Okay. St. John's and Omaha.
St. John.
Yep. All right. Florida versus Oklahoma.
Florida.
Memphis and Maryland.
I'm going to go Big Ten in that one. I'm going to go Maryland. Maryland's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. That kid, Queen. Ooh.
Yeah, he's talking about old school.
Oh, man, that Queen.
I'm going to have to tune in then.
Mo, he's a player after your own heart. That's for sure.
I'm rooting for Maryland.
He'd be tiptoeing through the tulips.
I'm gonna tune in. I like Maryland anyway.
He's got soft touch, good hands, good feet, but not very athletic. But that doesn't bother, you know, that doesn't seem to bother.
Yeah,
he knows how to get it done.
I like Maryland. There's a chain of fried chicken shops here in the UK called Maryland Chicken. So we'll roll with that. If you know, you know. Missouri or Texas Tech.
Ooh. haven't really watched either one of those great length, but I'll.
This is the thing with college. There's millions of teams to keep track of.
I'll default to
Texas.
To
Texas is the 3 seed. Missouri is the 6 seed.
Yeah.
Arkansas and St. John's.
St. John's.
I'm
going
to go St. John's.
Okay. Florida versus Maryland.
Florida.
And then Texas Tech or St. John's, the 3 and the 2 seed.
I'm going Ricky. Yeah, I'm going to Ruler.
I'll give St. John's to that. That'll be the last one up.
Okay, Florida or St. John's? You going Florida?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And they just have too much offense, and they're deep. They're deep. And they got good guard play too.
Yep.
So, man, I got to run. You guys go ahead. Do your thing.
All right, BJ. We'll catch up with you tomorrow, brother.
Okay. All right, later.
All right, Scott. We're going to fill out the Midwest bracket, and then we'll have the Final Four complete. We got Houston and SIU Edwardsville.
Houston.
Okay. Gonzaga and Georgia.
Give me Gonzaga.
Clemson and McNeese.
McNeese State is pretty good. This is one to watch for an upset. But I'm going to go Clemson, though.
Okay. Purdue and High Point.
Purdue.
Illinois versus Texas or Xavier.
But just like that other 11-6, that's a dangerous matchup. Illinois, I've watched Texas. Texas has some talent. But I'll go Illinois still.
Okay. Kentucky versus Troy.
Kentucky.
UCLA versus Utah State.
UCLA's been really up and down. I'm gonna pick a slight upset in that one. Utah State. Okay.
Tennessee versus Wofford. Wofford. I ain't even heard of them.
Wofford. That's in South Carolina, I believe. Tennessee.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Houston and Gonzaga.
Houston.
Clemson and Purdue.
I'm going to go Clemson.
Okay. Illinois and Kentucky. Where's Coach Cal? Coach Cal don't coach Kentucky no more.
No. Mark Pope is there. He's done a pretty good job with that group. I'm going to go Kentucky.
Okay. And then Utah State or Tennessee?
I'm going to go Tennessee.
Okay. And then Houston versus Clemson. You going with Houston?
Houston, yes. I'm going with Houston.
And then Kentucky or Tennessee?
I'm going to go Tennessee.
And then Houston, Tennessee to make it to the Final Four.
I'm going to go Houston Cougars.
Okay. So the Final Four is set. We got Michigan State versus Florida.
Michigan State versus Florida.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go Florida.
Yep. And then Duke versus Houston.
That's going to be a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
I could see Houston winning that game.
Okay. That leaves us with Florida and Houston in the championship game.
It may sound like a homer because I live in Florida, but I'm going to go to Gators.
Hey, I'm here for it. There we go. And then it says tiebreaker, enter your score prediction. Have you got a score prediction for us, Scott?
For the championship game?
Yep. Florida, Houston.
Houston is prides itself defensively. Florida can score and is deep. I'm going to go.
Seventy-two sixty-six. That is the official Hoop Genius podcast bracket for March Madness this year.
You mean that?
Man, that's gonna be interesting to see how it plays out.
It will be interesting.
In my experience, look,
I guarantee you there's gonna be some upsets in those brackets. But I do, I like the four teams we have coming out of the each region. So we'll see.
I have not much viewing time on college basketball this year. However, my experience with March Madness brackets is everyone's brackets bust on the first day because there'll be an upset.
There's no question, that's the beauty of it.
And for fans in the UK who are new to March Madness, it's like the FA Cup. The FA Cup's a football competition over here in the third round, which is a slightly different format, but there's always an upset. So there's going to be more upsets.
I picked a few of them in this bracket, knowing that there always is, but they could be completely the wrong upsets that I picked too, and so I won't be surprised. We'll see.
I'm looking forward to it, Scott. I appreciate you. That was a fun exercise. Hope you guys enjoyed another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, and we'll be back with more. So make sure you subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts from. And Scott, tell them what's good. Tell them what you could do the outro today.
Okay. And until next time, get buckets.